From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
One theme in this past week's news was data editing, specifically an enhanced push to get those who typically don't update maps to do so. There was news this week on TomTom's and MapQuest's plans to extend their users' ability to provide input, and USGS shared its experiences using the OpenStreetMap software stack to edit some state-level mapping data. How will these next steps into crowdsourcing geodata updates play out? Is this the way ahead? We'll tackle those questions after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. Get ArcGIS on your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. Download the free app from the Apple App Store. For more information, visit www.esri.com/ArcGIS for iOS.
Now, Joe, it was a big week or 10 days in the editing and volunteer geographic information space. And let me sort of run down what's new. Let me start with MapQuest. MapQuest is part of AOL, and AOL has invested a lot of money into OpenStreetMap and developing the data that is OpenStreetMap. And the latest enhancement for the MapQuest properties that use the OpenStreetMap data is a link in those online applications directly to an OpenStreetMap editor. So you can use either the Potlatch online editor, or you can use the JOSM, the downloadable editor, and you can actually make changes to the OpenStreetMap data sort of directly from MapQuest. And then there was an interview with Alan Dataille, who's on the board and is a co-founder and former chief executive at TeleAtlas, talking about what TomTom is doing. And he said this: engineers are now developing a new edition that will allow TomTom's 50 million users to update maps through online editing tools across every TomTom platform, such as smartphones and on the web and PNDs. Unquote. So up to this point, the real tool that TomTom had was this MapShare software that you could make some changes while you were driving around, if you saw errors, and then you had to connect that to your computer and then upload that back to TomTom, and there was a whole process for that. But it sounds like they want to push that out to many more different places to potentially have more people be involved in that editing process. And the big thing that Dataille said, this stuff is going to be checked for quality. It's not like OSM where it just goes in and then gets checked. It's going to get checked before it goes in. Now, the last thing that happened is maybe the most interesting, and that was a discussion on This Week in Maps with Eric Wolf, who works at USGS, talking about sort of a small trial that they did using the OpenStreetMap editing stack and working with some data from the state of Kansas. So it sounds like the folks at USGS used the tools, and then they also had some of the folks back in Kansas use some of the tools. And the idea was to sort of see how this works. And it sounds like the biggest issue that they ran into, I mean, there were some technical challenges along the way, but the real challenge was, how do we merge this sort of non-authoritative data and not potentially non-authoritative updating in with the USGS's authoritative data, because that's what they do. So it's kind of a whole bunch of different things happening, all related to getting more people involved with data updates. Now, did you have reactions to any of these things?
Well, my first reaction is that the involvement of all of these editing tools being put out there for individuals and people led me to think that there's an initial problem with the maps itself. And I think all of these organizations are involved in updating maps, right? This is their goal in life here is to get more and accurate base maps. And I think this whole movement around volunteer geographic information has got to be a little bit confusing to the people out there who are just observing this, because you would think that, for example, the USGS is the authoritative data source. Why do they need me as the individual to update maps? Why would I want to even think about doing that for a government organization, let alone a private company who is therefore supposed to have the resources to do this. And the only thing I could come back around to was that there was something that was on the TomTom MapShare website, which said that 18% of the nation's road information changes each year, and millions of TomTom users are documenting these changes daily. Just that little fact alone, that the nation's road information changes, that's a lot of information. Then you got to tie it back to why do it in the first place. Well, if that much information is changing, there's got to be a business case to do that. And I think that that's one of the things we need to tease out is, what's the reason all of these companies are wanting to do this? I thought they did this already. Why do we need to do it again? So those are some of the questions that popped into my mind initially.
Well, I think that business case issue is really important, because clearly somebody somewhere has either run the numbers or decided that the numbers are in their favor to really spend some time and energy looking into not only that we need to do this, that is capture input from our users, our partners, but also start looking at different ways to do it. I mean, let's face it, when TomTom came out with MapShare, that was sort of one of the first, I would argue, really easy to use sort of feedback loops for geodata. You're in your car, you've got a GPS, it's on, you're out there, you're looking at the road, and you can sort of save all those little tidbits of information very easily to then have them be uploaded back to TomTom.
Right, but practically, I'm only going to do it for my micro-geographic area, right? If I see that my street name has been mislabeled, or that the road is now being extended because there's a new subdivision there, and I think it's important to add that, that's really the only thing I'm going to do it to. If I'm in the middle of a big city I don't know, and all of a sudden I'm going down the wrong way on a one-way street, I don't know if I'm apt to do that. But maybe that's a little too down in the weeds.
I think it is, but I also think it's exactly the correct vision for using it, because you're the one who would notice and frankly care that your street was one way the wrong way, for example.
Right.
And you'd want to fix that. Now, you're right. When you get into geographies that are less important to you, hopefully they're somebody else's geographies and they're going to be important to them. But it's interesting to me that TomTom went ahead and built this system to make it very easy to do that. And I think that's part of what's interesting now, is how these different organizations and other ones like Waze are trying to get you involved in that with a gaming kind of infrastructure, with a social kind of infrastructure. But there's clearly a business case behind it, that there's value there. Now, what's interesting to me in that particular context is USGS, which not a rich government organization, is looking at an open source stack for editing. And they've already used other kinds of tools. In fact, I think, if I understood correctly on the podcast, that Eric Wolf noted that at one time they were using ArcIMS to try to do this kind of remote update access kind of thing. And here they are looking at an open source implementation. Is that a business case? Is that a money saver?
I think the business case for the USGS is that they're overloaded with map changes and map updates, and they're looking for a way to do that.
Right. No. But my real question there was why the open stack of OpenStreetMap. They've tried an ESRI implementation before. They've tried some other kinds of things before. This is where they're at now. That's interesting.
Yeah, the only rationale you could think of is that the success of OpenStreetMap in places like Haiti probably spurred them on to saying, well, this obviously works in that case. We don't necessarily have a crisis to update every map, but clearly the update mechanism was working.
The other part that's sort of interesting here, too, is that there's sort of a dichotomy between where the editing is available to be done and where it's not. So, for example, if you look at Google's implementation of this, which is Google MapMaker, I believe there's 114 countries where you can make changes and create data, and they're typically countries where there isn't great data. And in the case of MapQuest, right now the countries that have an open street map option are, I think you can count them on one hand, there's the UK and Germany and I think one other or two. So those are the only ones where you can actually do that editing. And I think there's some antsiness, I guess is the way I would put it. I've heard a couple of people comment about how when Google did its last update of data for, I believe it was 10 countries, several people stood up and said, oh, and they're using their own data from MapMaker. except that those were not mapmaker countries. But I think people want them to be. I think people are very excited about that idea.
Yeah, I think they are. And I think that it, once again, what we're grasping at is we want better maps in places that are more and more remote, right? Where maps had typically not been great. There's this element of I really, really want better maps from maybe it's just from the standpoint of advancing the technology or advancing the information sharing. This is where the excitement lies because it's never been done very much before. So,
but I think there's also this antsiness too. I think people had sort of mixed results with what we have here in the United States, which is the report a problem link in Google Maps.
Right.
And I use that to fix my street, which was misgeocoded. It was geocoded backwards, and it was fixed, and then it was unfixed, and I submitted it again, and I think it's fixed now, but it was quite painful. So I have that antsiness as well. I want to go in there, and I want to fix it definitively and be done with it, because I care, because this is my street. And I might also care and be anxious to work on some kind of situation in Haiti or an earthquake in China or something like that. But other places I'm not so excited about, and I think that's fine, that if we can get that energy, if any of these organizations can get that energy, that's what's going to make this work.
But let's step back for a second, because you said something interesting. You felt the need to update your own street. Where was the original authoritative data source that made that wrong in the first place?
Well, I can tell you that, because back in the day when it was from an authoritative data source, TeleAtlas, it was correct. Remember when Google switched over to using its own data in the U.S.? That's where my street got wrong.
Okay. And so that leads me to the issue of, where's the authoritative data source? Why wasn't the authoritative data source used? Why do we need another authoritative data source? And why was that wrong?
And that's a question that needs to go to Google, right? Google, why did you stop using TeleAtlas data and start using your own mishmash of data, and it was wrong? Yeah. And my street is far from the only situation where that has popped up in the United States.
Right, but look what's happening. We're going to have TomTom doing their own updates. We're going to have the USGS doing their own updates, and maybe the Postal Service is using something else entirely. I don't know. My point here is that there is no authoritative data source. There are pieces of information floating out there, and competing factions out there trying to get contributed geographic information, community source, crowdsource, whatever. And yet there is not going to be an authoritative data source we can trust.
I think you've made a very important point there, and I can give you an example of that. I suspect many of our listeners have heard about this situation in Nicaragua, where it was suggested that somebody in the army decided that the border, based on where it was on Google, allowed them to take over a small piece of land. Well, that story is kind of falling apart. But what was interesting to me was that when it was reported, I believe this was on CNN, how did they check whether Google's boundary was correct? They went and checked on Microsoft's Bing Maps. Now, so they didn't go to the State Department. They didn't go to National Geographic.
So
that tells me a couple of things. Somebody somewhere believes that Google is an authoritative source. A journalist somewhere believes that Bing Maps is an authoritative source, and nobody seems to think of the State Department or National Geographic. So you're right. There is no authoritative source.
Or Rand McNally, where we used to go to Rand McNally.
These sort of, quote, old names that we know that maybe a different generation isn't even familiar with. There's a lot of implications for all of these changes that are happening all at once. And let's tackle one final topic if we can. And that's, what's going to happen to the folks who aren't yet tapping into this or trying to figure out how to tap into this kind of crowdsourced volunteer geographic information group editing? What's going to happen to them?
So what, give me an example of these people that you're saying.
What is Nokia/Navtech doing in this space?
Mm-hmm.
Anything?
Nothing that I know of.
Nothing that I know of either.
And what about somebody like the Ordnance Survey in the UK? talk about an authoritative data source who keeps their data tightly under lock. I believe they are opening up to crowdsourcing. Is that not correct, or maybe I'm wrong about that?
I haven't seen anything on that. They certainly are making it more available for more people to use with kinder licensing.
But you know what I'm getting at. It's these so-called authoritative data sources who had very, very tight control of their information, which we thought USGS was. And now they're thinking that maybe crowdsourcing is a better way to at least augment some of their maps. I think it's a valid question. I think this is not a question that's going to go away. I just have to bring up one more point because I just thought it was such an eye-opening thing because it wraps back around to the business case. And it's something that was said in the Geospatial Revolution video part two, where the guy from UPS.
I know what you're going to say.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead, say it.
And he said, we are an IT company that just happens to drive trucks and deliver packages.
Right, whereas before, we used to be a company with a bunch of trucks.
It was such an eye-opening, you know, aha moment. And what's the IT? Well, the information is roads and maps. And that's a huge investment for them.
And they update their own maps.
And that's their IP, right?
Right, and they do it themselves. Their drivers are trained, and they have their cool little device, and they do it.
And if anybody was going to crowdsource nuances to maps, it's those drivers who got to drive those streets and be accurate and save money and save gas.
Well, I don't think we have any sense of where this is going, but I think that we really need to keep an eye on it, and it's fascinating that we've got these public, private, open, closed, we've got all these different organizations trying to tap into the energy of the crowd and to figure out the technology that's going to make that possible. That's all the time we have for today. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like you to know that the ESRI video website is a valuable resource that delivers a wealth of insight and instruction to the GIS community. The collection of videos features expert speakers on a variety of geospatial topics, full-length technical sessions, and software demonstrations. To explore ESRI video content, visit www.esri.com/video. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a message at Directions Magazine.
And there's still time to take our reader survey. We'd love to hear from you. We'd like your comments and feedback. And you'll be entered into a random drawing for one of three Kindles that we'll be giving away. So please give us your feedback.
And you have until December 1st to do that. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.